When you said you wanted to change gears, I was hoping you wanted to talk about motorcycles, but that's not what you meant. I didn't ask you if I could cuss on your show, but there's a lot of there's a lot of miserable fucks, I think, in airports, and that's why it got picked to be in one.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Bad Yogi Podcast with me, Erin Motz. Today, I don't know if you can tell, but my voice is struggling. I am struggling a little bit because I have a cold. And you know what's best about having a cold today? Probably that I am nearing 38 weeks pregnant, which means I could go into labor at any time. And I really hope I don't while I am sick. But this topic actually came up randomly, a little bit randomly, with my guest today. And today's guest is basically to therapy who I am to yoga, if that makes sense. So we have John Kim, the angry therapist, on the show, and I'm really looking forward to sharing this episode with you. For some context, John is a licensed therapist. He's also a published author, a speaker, and happens to be a life coach. But he started a blog called The Angry Therapist a while ago as a place to kind of just be himself without a filter while he was going through a divorce. So it turned into something kind of unexpected that people really resonated with, because people don't typically see therapists as real people with real feelings. And I don't know if you've ever noticed that, but it's true. I mean, when we think of therapists, we think of these people who are kind of perfect and maybe have it all together. That's why they're able to give from this perspective. Maybe you think that way, maybe not. But I think it's easy to fall into the trap of, like, if you're seeing a therapist for, you know, I don't know, your marriage, that, wow, this person must have a great marriage, right? So I thought it was really interesting that he kind of started this blog because he was going through a divorce and just wanted a place to be real. He just didn't want to be that guy that seemed to have it all together all the time, because he didn't. So he blogged about his shortcomings, his revelations, and his views on relationships and the self-help business, the whole world. He also, in this time frame, found CrossFit, bought a motorcycle, started coaching people in unconventional ways. So I don't know if you've noticed this too, but I really think therapists are having a moment on Instagram. And when I was looking for an interesting therapist to bring on to talk about important issues like relationships and, you know, finding your purpose in life, I found a lot of people, just not a lot of interesting people. So when I found John, I was like, oh, this is our guy, you know, this is the guy we've got to have on the show for this purpose. So he's a lot more transparent and real than traditional therapists. And I just love that. I love that he didn't put himself on a pedestal at all. And we had a really interesting chat about relationships and, after changing gears, also how to build your purpose in life. So it's a really great episode. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. And let's go ahead and jump into it. John Kim, the angry therapist, thank you so much for coming on. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me. I always, when I get asked to do podcasts, I always feel like I got picked to be on the team. It's such a good feeling.
Absolutely. Well, I was never picked to be on any team, so I could, that would be,
me
that
either.
Is very exciting.
Yeah. It's makeup time.
Exactly. I don't know if you've noticed this, but I have definitely noticed this surge in therapists having a moment on Instagram. I mean, it's like, it's kind of insane. They're everywhere.
Yeah. And you know what? I like it. I feel like therapists in the last, I don't know, maybe 5 years have been pushed aside because the explosion of life coaching. And me being a therapist, but also a coach, I mean, I think we're all on the same team, but there's this weird kind of dynamic between therapists and life coaches. And I think it's because therapists, you know, they had to go to school, do the training, years of clinical study and all of that. So I don't know. I think the internet has promoted coaching for the last 5 years, and now therapists, they're kind of making their comeback.
That is a really good point. I hadn't thought about it from that perspective, but there is a certain connotation with quote unquote life coach versus therapist. And yes. I don't know if it's the practical side of me that is skeptical, but I think, like you said, life coaches certainly have a place. But I don't know if it's between, do I want to talk to a therapist or a life coach? I kind of want to get the opinion of the therapist first, you know, because I feel like there's that extra layer of legitimacy. I don't know. Yeah. Am I being kind of a jerk about this?
No, you're not. I think it's an interesting conversation. I think coaching is becoming, especially now, more legit in that, you know, 10 years ago, I mean, there was the idea of a life coach was, I mean, other than like Tony Robbins, there wasn't a life coach. Yeah. But now, you know, there's mindfulness coaches, there's meditation coaches. I think it because you can be niche now and you can be very specific on what you want to coach, that coaching is just becoming very popular. But also coaches tend to show themselves more. So I think that's another reason why people are gravitating toward coaches. But of course, you know, I'm a coach and a therapist, and I think we should all hold hands. I mean, I even have a life coaching academy called Journey. So, and I started that because I was frustrated with the clinical system. But I'm also, you know, I'm also a therapist, and I'm not ashamed of being a therapist. I think it's good to be both, you know.
Absolutely. No, I love it. Well, we definitely, our team resonated with you because, you know, kind of like Bad Yogi, the angry therapist, could at first come off like, oh, maybe it's flashy, maybe it's to get attention or whatever. But yeah, there's actually real substance there. And I'm very curious to know how you went from John Kim, regular therapist, to now John Kim, the angry therapist.
Yeah. So I was angry in my 20s and 30s. And that anger came from being unhappy, not having a life that hung on meaning. So I was just I didn't allow myself to be happy until I had these shiny things and they never came. So I was miserable. And then I went through a divorce and started a blog because I had a lot of time on my hands. I was on my way to becoming a therapist, and I didn't think anyone would read it. Tumblr was kind of new at the time. And it was just kind of like my diary. So I called it The Angry Therapist. I thought it was kind of funny that a therapist was angry. I thought the happy therapist wasn't interesting. And I just kind of pulled the curtain back and started to talk about my feelings, you know, and what I was going through. And I didn't know this at the time, but what I was doing was I was humanizing the therapist. I think that's why, you know, some people thought it was kind of interesting that this Korean dude with tattoos, finding CrossFit, going through a divorce, and was, you know, also having to be a therapist, was sharing his feelings. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Oh, definitely. I actually fully relate to that transition because I was doing a lot of work online, like writing articles and things like that. This was like 7 years ago, and trying to fit in with normal yogis and yoga people.
Yeah.
And suddenly it occurred to me that I was like, this sucks. This is so uninteresting. This isn't even who I am. So forget this like whole good yogi vibe. Like I am a bad yogi. That's just what I am. And I fully anticipated nobody would care or people would be really pissed off about that. Right. But turns out, you know, when you're honest, it tends to resonate a little bit better.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, you went the other way.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, what's interesting is when something commercializes, and in this case, wellness, it forms a crust. It forms like a veneer. There's almost a falseness to it. And I think that's why people probably resonated with Bad Yogi, because they were just kind of sick of the shine.
Mm. Yeah, well, likewise, I think it's very similar.
Yeah.
As I was kind of looking around your website and social channels, kind of getting to know you better, one of the things that stood out to me was that you talk a lot about kind of two main topics, which is basically, if I'm being really general here, relationships, mm-hmm. and then kind of finding a purpose in life. So I'm going to dive kind of right into the deep end with you on some of these. And I ended up taking some of my favorite quotes that you shared on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And I wanted you to expand on some things for us. For example, on the topic of relationships, I liked what you had to say. You said, if you have to convince them to be with you, what would that relationship look like?
Yeah.
And I think this applies to so many aspects of relationship. Obviously, convincing someone to be with you is a big one. But what about convincing someone who doesn't want to have children to have them? Someone who doesn't want to live in a certain city to live there? Where should we draw the line, in your opinion? Like, what's healthy compromise and what's having to work too hard to get what you want?
Yeah, well, I think there's a difference between convincing and a conversation. So when it comes to things like children, you know, whatever, where people want to live or, you know, other things in relationships that we all, you know, have to have conversations about, I think that's fair. And I think people change as, you know, time goes by. So there's room there to have those conversations. But convincing is a little different. I think when you convince someone, you are, and if you do convince someone, then you're not allowing them to execute their sense of self. And so what happens is that things get lopsided, you know, and then there's also room to build anger and resentment. So anytime you are convincing someone, you're taking away their truth. And then if that happens, I think you're kind of building a relationship more on sand.
That definitely makes sense. And so is there like the convincing? I think a lot of people, when I put out to the community that we were having you on, we got a lot of questions about relationships and this topic came up. So I love that there was like a quote that you had on your Instagram about it. But I think people feel like the conversation has to go their way. Otherwise, the relationship is over, you know? And I think that's a scary point to get to for a lot of people.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that has to do with control. I think when I'm coaching people, they're not willing to, in their relationship, let go of the tug-of-war rope. And so you have two people pulling on this rope, then it becomes about ego. And, you know, you're stunting growth and your relationship just becomes a pattern and a circle. There's no room for expansion. That whole thing came from me coaching a lot of women, mostly dating, who would let go of their non-negotiables because they wanted to be in something so bad. Mm. And another part of this is when you can't have something, you almost want it more. It's like human nature.
Yeah.
And so that's when someone says, I'm not sure, then you really try to convince them. And then they get into a relationship and that ambivalence ripples into it. And they're like, oh, this is not a good relationship. Well, because he wasn't really sure about you in the first place, you know?
Right. No, absolutely. And I love that you talked about the element of control, because I think, and you can definitely correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like you can't really have control and a true partnership in a relationship. Like, you either are in control and you're in charge, you're leading everything, or you're sort of walking side by side. Do you think that's accurate or maybe not?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's also, I think, generally just in life, you know, if you try, it's like if you try to control whatever you want to control and you want things to be the way you want them to be, and you're really holding that with two hands, the way that life works and the way that relationships work, it's going to be, you're going to be shaken. And if you're not willing to let go of that, or at least to have conversations or compromise, it's going to be instant friction and anxiety always.
Absolutely. So this brings me to another one that I saw that I liked that I wanted you to expand on, which was do what you need to let go of what happens, because life doesn't live there. And I love this, but easier said than done, right? Someone hurt you, a situation pissed you off, and now it's just sitting there lingering, whatever it is. How does someone truly begin to, quote, let go of anything?
Well, I think it depends on what you need to let go. But I think the misconception there is that about letting go is that you just do it once and it's done. And I think letting go, like forgiveness, like choosing to love, it's a daily practice, you know? And I think that some days it's easy to let go of something. And then some days it's really hard to. So it's a process. I think it starts with a decision. And then I think it's a daily process of creating distance, forgiving, whatever you need to do to kind of let that go and to leave it in the past.
Can I ask what your personal favorite ways of doing that are? Is it just a simple verbal internal reminder of like, oh, remember you said you were going to let this go? Or how can people actually put that into practice?
I think it's seeing what happened through new lenses. So if you just tell yourself you need to let something go, but you don't explore or see what happened through different perspectives, or throw empathy at it, or, you know, see it through the person you are now instead of who you were. If you don't do any of that and you just tell yourself you're letting go, it's very two-dimensional. And I think it's slippery. I don't think anything's going to happen, you know, just because you're telling yourself. And then you get frustrated because you haven't, right? So I think it's really looking at something, whether it's a marriage or maybe someone cheated on you or whatever it is that you're holding on to, and looking at it through new lenses and having that revelation that this is not, it's not serving you anymore, or it feels different today, or, you know, and it's easier to actually let go by dropping into your body and feeling it, you know?
Yeah. This would be a different relationship, of course, but I think about it in terms of family. I've heard many times from different books and other people that with parents or even anybody they're interacting with, try to see them as the wounded child version of themselves, which can be difficult to do, I think, but I guess that's kind of an example of what you're talking about, right? Yeah. Through a different lens. Yeah.
Through different lenses. And also like who you were when it happened is probably not who you are now today. And mm-hmm. so, you know, when like, you know, if, as an adult, when you go back to high school and you yeah. go to everything looks smaller, you go to that place where you, you know, kiss the person underneath the bleachers yeah. where, and everything was so big in high school because everything was, yeah. the world was big and everything was, you know, life or death. And then as an adult, when you go back, you're like, wow, that's so tiny. And that, and so it gives you a new perspective. And I think it's the same kind of process where you, when you look back at something with the tools that you have today or who you are today, you'll hopefully see that situation in a different light. You know, you'll see it with a new lens. And I think then you can kind of create more space for you to actually let it go or to accept it or to not allow it to, you know, impact your life today.
Yeah, so true. And that also makes me think that it's also okay to take time to distance yourself from whatever situation that is, where like you don't have to just let it go if it happened 10 minutes ago. This could be a process as well.
Right. And the leverage you can use is how is holding on to it rippling into your life today? So, you know, all areas of your life, because you're holding on to this, you know, what's your behavior like? What, you know, is it impacting your relationships? Is it consuming you? Is it, you know, throwing you into a time machine where you can't be present? So when you actually realize and maybe make a list of all the things that is happening today because of what happened, then you can see like the importance of actually letting go or working through it, you know, whatever you need to do to move past it.
Yeah, no, that is super, super important, because I think we all get a little bit, depending on the situation, we all get a little bit self-righteous about the rightness of our feelings. And we feel like we need to hold on to them because, oh, this thing happened and I am justified. And really, after a while, it's like, well, would it be better for me if I actually processed this and worked on releasing or just holding on to it forever and ever indefinitely until it eats me alive, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's a good practice.
I think a lot of people don't allow them to feel because it's the feelings are bad or painful. And, you know, the thing with feelings is they flow through you. So if you allow yourself to feel, it's part of letting go. You know, a lot of people just kind of like they hold their feelings, they suppress them. There's a lot of anger there. They don't process their feelings. Instead, they just like have the, you know, the clenched fist. And then logically they tell themselves they want to let something go, but they're actually not doing it with their body.
And you said those magic words, allow yourself to feel, which reminds me of several people, again, when I put this out, right? Several women got back to me and they were like asking me some variation of how to get a man to open up. And you had a great quote about this, that men tend to maneuver within two modes, pissed off or shut down. And I could totally see it. But let's say, how do you break that down? How do you get past those modes?
Yeah, I think first, you do it first. Meaning, if you want your man to show emotion, then you should as well. So by example, but also then expressing that this is something that I need in the relationship. You know, I need you to do life with me. I need you to tell me how your day went. Tell me how you feel and all that. You know, it's not something that I want. It's something that I really need because it makes me feel connected to you. I think the mistake would be to say you're not doing this. Or, you know, like to actually blame and to point fingers, that usually doesn't work. It's more about setting the example and then expressing what you need.
And I think, I mean, I'm definitely reading between the lines here, but I've been there myself, of course. I think a lot of women might feel like their expression of emotion is going to send the man in their life through a bit of a loop, like, whoa, this is a bit more than I can handle. And then what, if that's the case, you know, is that like a deal breaker, do you think? Or do you think generally people, men would be receptive to that opening up from the other side?
Well, I think there's a difference between expressing yourself and just vomiting on someone. And, you know, this is where the whole self-awareness comes in. And it doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman. I think we have, as people, we should express ourselves. You know, I talk about doing life with your partner instead of at or around. And doing life with your partner means expressing yourself and how your day was and your state and what you're going through. And I think a lot of people don't do that because they don't want to vomit on their partner, or they don't want to, or they go the other way and they think self-expression means, you know, say announcing every feeling they have. And of course, there's a responsibility in expressing yourself, meaning, you know, you have to put it through a strainer and you have to think about how your expression is going to affect the other person. So yes, you should express what you're going through in your state, what's important to you, but you can't vomit on your partner because then that's not fair to your partner.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that could also be helped by not bottling it up for too long. Yeah. And then by the time you're ready to express it, it is this explosion of, you know, just you've got to get it all out. Whereas if you make it a habit and you make it a normal part of your communication, it becomes less of a big deal to say whatever's on your mind.
Yeah. I think humans are like pressure cookers and you have to release that valve. And so whether you do it with your friends, a therapist, or with your partner, I think that's your responsibility. If not, then you're, you know, suddenly throwing chairs and your relationship is like an episode of Telemundo and that's not good.
It's not good. You've also spoken a lot about boundaries. How do we lovingly hold our boundaries, you know, without coming off like an asshole, basically? So that applies to romantic relationships, but I think this applies to, I mean, geez, fill in the blanks, friends, in-laws, your own parents.
Yeah.
It can be tough.
You do it with compassion and kindness. You know, you can be firm and draw boundaries, but you don't have to be an asshole. So I think a lot of people think that drawing boundaries means that, I don't know, you're shutting people out or you're being insensitive. You don't have to do it that way. You could do it in a way where it starts with a conversation with yourself and it's a way of that you are practicing self-love. And then you could actually draw boundaries by communicating. You know, a lot of people don't realize that they could actually talk to the other person about the boundaries instead of just drawing them, you know, instead of just sending people the voicemail. That's not drawing boundaries.
Of course. Yeah. So you mean like draw it out in actual words and not being a little bit cowardly about it? And,
yeah. Like, okay. You know, I'm trying to think of an example, but like, I don't know, let's say you're drawing a boundary with a friend saying, hey, listen, it's not that I don't want to go with you guys, but you know, some of the people that we hang out with now, I can't really relate to, don't take it personally. You know, having an explanation that this is kind of my new boundary now. If you don't have that communication, then what the other person is getting is just a revolt or a disengagement or some kind of line drawn in the sand, and then they're going to react to that, and suddenly, you know, there's going to be a lot of relationships that are broken or that expire because of it, you know.
Oh, yeah. No, that makes perfect sense. And I think, you know, maybe I'm speaking to people who are similar to me, but I think another thing that would help is to stop making yourself responsible for other people's reactions to your setting boundaries. So, you know, it's like, okay, here's the thing, like doesn't work for me because of this. And then if somebody gets mad about it, then you're mad because you're like, how dare you be upset about this thing that is so reasonable. So wink, wink, asking for a friend, you know, how do you get over those feelings of like, oh, you shouldn't even feel this way about this very reasonable thing that I've done?
You know, the thing about growth is that as you grow, and this is a whole thing where, you know, people say you outgrow other people, the dynamic of the relationship changes, whether it's your friendships or, you know, maybe with your intimate partner. And this is why they say that if, you know, two people are not growing together, they're growing apart. Yeah. That dynamic changing creates resistance. It creates, so if you start to draw boundaries or you start to grow and your friend's like, you know, if your friend is having feelings about this, it's because your friend is used to the old dynamic, the old you. So then your friend is not allowing you to become a better version of yourself, right? And so that's not fair to you. So, you know, if you draw boundaries and you're kind about it and you explain why, and it's coming from a place of, you know, place of growth, not a place of anger, resentment, or anything like that, and your friend or anyone, they can't accept it, then basically you have to ask yourself, do I want to grow and expand? Do I want to live, you know, at my potential, or do I want to sacrifice that to please someone else? And by pleasing that other person, you're also now snapping back, promoting that other dynamic and stunting their growth.
Yes, absolutely.
Sometimes we need to outgrow people, not for us, but for them.
And that's true too. And sometimes that can be a hard pill to swallow, but I definitely agree. It happens.
Yeah.
So I want to change gears a little bit and kind of move over to the side of purpose in life. This is another one of those things that so many people feel a little bit lost in. And one thing that I really had never heard it expressed like this that I saw you talk about was that you often ask your clients to imagine what they would feel like when they accomplish a goal, not just what the goal is.
Yeah.
So yeah, tell me about that, because it is, you say it's about more attraction rather than chasing of something.
When you said you wanted to change gears, I was hoping you wanted to talk about motorcycles, but that's not what you meant. So I talk about chasing versus attracting a lot, and I'm referring to our state and our mindset. And so one of the reasons why I used to be so miserable was I was always in a chasing state. Today, I think I'm more in an attracting state. And this has to do with what you're talking about, in that when I used to be very logical and I used to, like, you know, visualize and see things, but I never allowed myself to actually feel it, you know? So whether we're talking about in relationships or in what you want for your future, and I think that there's power in the connection we have to our body. So we're not just logical creatures, but that intersection between our mind, body, and soul. Like if you're able to live there, if you're able to pull from there, if you're able to visualize from there, I think that's where your truth is. And I think that's when you maneuver more in an attracting state than a chasing state. I think a lot of people just maneuver through life using their logic, and they're just kind of grayed out, you know?
Yeah. And do you feel like you're able to achieve as highly attracting versus when you're chasing?
Am I able? Oh, yeah. It doesn't mean, so when you're attracting, it doesn't mean you're on the couch just crossing your fingers and hoping. I mean, you have to go and bust your ass. Like, you have to work. I mean, to build anything in this world, it doesn't matter if it's a marriage or, you know, a brand or whatever you're building. I think you have to work a lot, you know? I actually think, like, life balance is kind of bullshit. You know, the amount of time it takes to build anything substantial, you can't cut that into like a perfect pie that's equal to all areas of your life, you know? And you probably know this. You have a brand, you have a business, you have to thread into your life. It has to become a lifestyle.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I'm actually so glad you said that. I was actually writing it down because I so agree with you. And that was actually another thing I wanted to chat about as well, was talking a little bit about that ambition, because I do think ambition can become toxic, you know, like we can get carried away by our ambition and feeling like, oh, this is never enough. We're always in a rush. Our purpose becomes cloudy and we're just focused on the chase. But there isn't, I think there's kind of a season where you are more heavily on that side of things, and a season where maybe you're more relaxed and quote unquote balanced.
Yeah, I think that there's an ebb and flow to it, you know, and this whole idea of work-life balance makes you feel like if you work too much, then there's something wrong with you. And I'm not saying that, you know, to be a workaholic and ignore your children.
Right.
But I just know that the amount of work it takes to build anything in this world or to make any kind of dent is significant, you know? And so you're right. It comes in seasons. And when you know, like, for example, like if I'm writing a book, I don't have a lot of balance in my life. I'm buried in my book, you know, for that, you know, 3-4 months. And then when I come out of it, then of course I, you know, realign and go back to some of the things that I haven't been giving myself. But that's just the life of a writer, you know. I don't know if I completely balance every day my writing with everything else I do that a book would ever happen.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, kind of on that note, do you think that being constantly in the pursuit of more rather than focused on fulfilling our soul's deeper desires, you know, sitting at the pool and doing the other things, can those things live together, ambition and fulfillment, do you think?
I think if you just focus on what's meaningful to you, I think it's better to not label. Like, you know, it does fall under the category of more or ambition. But if you just do things that are meaningful to you, if you just work in a way that's honest to you, and not judge what you want, you know, because like I want fancy things, you know, I want, and that's okay. But those things, I mean, the difference between the old me and the new me is that those things, they don't define me. And that's not the only reason why I'm doing what I'm doing, right? Like those are the byproducts. So whether it's, you know, motorcycles or cars or houses or whatever things that you're into, or maybe fancy trips or whatever, that's a byproduct of you, I think, running towards your purpose and your true north. You know, it's not, that's not the island to swim toward.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's your kind of best practice for preventing that feeling of nothing ever being enough, or or even worse, the one that says like, oh, I should be in this place by now at this stage of my life. You know, I mean, how do we get past that?
And I think it's harder today more than ever because of social media, because of all the, you know, the false advertising, the filtered photo and the followers and, you know, like just comparing yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think before, you know, no one really compares themselves to celebrities that much because celebrities are celebrities and a movie star is a movie star. But now we're able to compare our lives to our neighbors, you know, because of social media. And so because that wall has come down, it's easier to be harder on ourselves because our neighbors are taking trips or our neighbors are, you know, creating whatever residual income or you know, whatever it is that you want. That's very different than, say, Tom Cruise being a millionaire because you're like, well, I'm never going to be Tom Cruise. So there's an acceptance there. But when you're competing with your neighbor, then it's like, it's very easy to feel less than.
Absolutely.
But I didn't answer your question. How do you kind of not allow that to affect you? I think knowing that you're on your own journey and not comparing your story to someone else, I think daily practicing gratitude, putting a lot of weight on how far you've come, you know, working on your ability to produce joy with whatever you have in your life right now, not, you know, when something happens.
Yeah. And I think that's one of those things too, that joy begets more joy and celebrating your wins begets more wins. So when you're in a good place mentally, you're able to go into the world in a more productive way.
Yeah. I think so. And I think all of that, again, you know, contributes to more of an attracting state than a chasing state.
Yes.
Yeah.
You also have said that your which I also loved, your purpose is built, not found. And I was like, okay, but hold on. We're told, you know, by everybody that we're all born with purpose. So it feels right that we'd have to be on this journey to like go dig it up and find it. So what do you mean by this, building versus finding?
Yeah, I think, first of all, I think we have many purposes. It's like the whole soulmate idea. You know, if you believe you're only supposed to be with one person, like if you believe that you're only, like there's only one person that's going to be your soulmate for the rest of your life, it's like, what are the chances of you being,
it's a lot of pressure.
It's a lot of pressure, right? And it doesn't matter if you really believe it or not, if that's the mindset that you have, yeah, there's a lot of pressure. And so like with purpose, I don't think it's a singular path in that, you know, you ring this bell at the end. I think that we have many purposes throughout our life. Some are big, some are smaller, depending on our seasons and you know, what we're interested in and who we are at the time, because we change, right? So, and then I think that those purposes, they kind of like, they pay off and they kind of, you know, roll into each other. So when you think of it that way, there's a lot less pressure to find your purpose, like this with the capital P, and it makes people feel less than. And so, yeah. But going back to your question, what was your question about?
Just talking about the difference between how you see versus like we have to build our purpose. Oh, build,
right. When you say you have to find your purpose, I don't know. It feels kind of like you don't have to work. You're just kind of waiting and something's going to happen. Yeah. And I don't believe in that. I think that purpose is built. And by built, I mean that you have to go and work and run toward your dreams by, you know, working hard. And then that purpose is revealed through whatever you've built, you know? And then maybe you then change gears and build something else and all that. So I just like this idea that we have to work for our purpose, that it's not something that just falls on our lap.
Yes, I so agree. It's funny because this is like a very mild, tiny example, but I had a girlfriend when she moved into her new place, you know, months had passed and we were talking and she was like, yeah, I still have this one box in the corner that I have to unpack, but you know, it'll get done whenever it's meant to get done. And I was like, you do realize that you can just unpack, like it's not going to get done if you don't actually do it.
Yeah, I think especially with wellness today, people can hide behind all that stuff. And then there's a lot of excuses. And then, you know, they're like, well, it's not happening because it's not meant to. And then you're like, well, what have you done? What have you done to work toward it? Oh, nothing, but it's not happening. So, you know, just it's not meant to be. And it's like, well, maybe you like work for it.
Oh, 1,000%. I have like my little amen hands up because so true. So true.
Well, I mean, like, look at, you're about to have a baby. Right. You're about to, I mean, you could have one as we speak, and then you're here interviewing me and still working and building. So, you know,
Yeah, I think it usually comes down to priorities. And of course, you know, my priority when it's actually time will be that. And it will be that,
sure,
that not really balanced, but that one pie slice will be bigger for that amount of time. And then we'll shift gears again.
Right,
so
right.
It's a dance always. Now, I know that we are short on time today, but people are definitely going to want more of you. So, okay, where do they go?
I guess just Instagram, The Angry Therapist, or my website, theangrytherapist.com.
And you also have a book, though, yeah?
Yeah, I'm on my third book. The third book isn't out yet, and the second book is out, and it's everywhere. It's called I Used to Be a Miserable Fuck, and Every Man's Guide to Meaningful Life. And so that's been a really fun book. Yeah, it's in airports.
Yeah, they'll remember that one.
What's that?
Oh, it's in airports? I said people will definitely remember that. But yeah, it's a good airplane read.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of miserable... I didn't ask you if I could cuss on your show, but there's a lot of...
Oh, yeah.
Okay, there's a lot of miserable fucks, I think, in airports, and that's why it got picked to be in one. But yeah, it's really cool to see it at the airport. That's been a huge highlight this year for me.
Yeah, I feel like if I was sitting next to somebody in the plane that was reading that book, I would have to talk to them because... it's just perfect. It's a perfect conversation starter.
Yeah. And I would love the fact that they picked it up because it's kind of like announcing and admitting that you were once miserable, which a lot of people don't want to do because they don't want the world to think that they were.
Exactly. We all have our masks on.
Yeah.
Perfection and such.
Yeah.
Well, this has been super great. I know people are going to definitely want to hear more from you. I really appreciate you coming on and I can't wait for people to hear this.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
There you have it. So as usual, I'd love to know what your biggest takeaway was from today's episode. I personally definitely appreciated the reminder about how work-life balance doesn't really exist and that our purpose can change with the seasons in our life. You know, like what might be your purpose, what might feel like your purpose today might kind of fizzle out at some point in the future, and then you're building something new again. And I think that's a great reminder because I personally have definitely gotten stuck in that trap of thinking like, wait, I mean, I used to be so fulfilled by this one activity or this one thing, and almost feeling guilty or like I'm betraying myself in a way if I'm gonna change gears. So I think that's a really important thing that I personally took away, but I'd love to hear from you as well. We had limited time to chat today, and I know, I'm sorry it was kind of a shorter episode, but John is just such an awesome resource for all of this, and I think that you definitely need to go check him out at theangrytherapist.com because there you can learn more about him, obviously, but also find out more about his books, listen to his podcast. Yes, he totally has one. Plus, check him out on Instagram at theangrytherapist for daily reminders about how to be a little bit less miserable, which we could all use some of. So thank you so much for joining me today. And remember to subscribe to this podcast and leave a review if you got anything valuable out of it, or if you've ever gotten anything valuable out of any other episode we've done. Only takes a minute and it goes such a long way in helping other people learn about us too. So thank you again for tuning in. I hope you loved it. I hope you have a great day and I'll see you right back here next time.